Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Canis Albinus.
Makalua.
The main team.
Mega Bears fan. Welcome, Internet, to Polycast episode 349, which will hopefully not be a dumpster fire on account of the fact that our usual host, Canis Albinus, is not here. You internet people will have to make do with myself, Mega Bears fan, along with usual hosts Makalua.
Who was so confused I opened Skype instead of Discord. Oops!
And the Mian team.
Leading the ship, hopefully not off a cliff.
Yeah, I was expecting Discord to work like Skype. I was waiting for Phil to call me, and then we were late, so that's a little bit on me.
Yeah, turtles all the way down. I'll steer us off to flat Earth.
Well, speaking of things that show up all the time, how about those AIs that always show up in your game? This is a topic started over in Civ and Hedix by La Bella Vienna. At least in, well, I'm going to say their case because the picture is a girl, but I don't know if that's them or their girlfriend or what have you. So, but Shaka shows up in every single game that I play. Why? They never get Wilhelmina or Gandhi, but Saladin and Arabia shows up all the time. This is like a Civ 5 where they had Russia every game, and so they asked the community, oh, which leaders show up for you?
Shaka's a popular one, because you're going to get some confirmation bias slash fond memories every time you get a Civ like that in your game.
Yeah, you kind of tend to notice when it's Shaka, but, you know, there's probably other ones that show up. Let me think. Korea a lot, actually, because if it's not a human playing Korea in the multiplayer games, then Korea shows up and is a pain in the butt. 11 billion thousand science.
So, like, for me, the closest thing I can think of is Congo, but not really. Like, I just don't, I don't experience this, I guess. That said, Civ 6, I believe, has changed how it works from Civ 4. Back in Civ 4, you actually were more likely to see some leaders than others, because the game would first select a Civ and then select a leader. So, for example, Shaco is 3 times more likely than Lincoln, because there were 3 American leaders. So, there actually was some degree of this previously, but I don't think that's true any longer.
So yeah, I don't think I have any one Civ that I think shows up too often in my Civ 6 games. I know in Civ 5, I think it was Alexander and Napoleon. Every game, it seemed like they were there, just warmongering up an entire continent. I think the closest I ever came in Civ 6 was Vanilla, and Vanilla was Congo. But since the expansion packs, I haven't seen Congo as much, so... Yeah, I can't think of any one Civ that I feel shows up all the time. I think I see Norway a lot, but they're usually a pushover, so meh.
I think we see Russia a lot in a multiplayer game, too.
You have not developed your culture enough.
It's turn two, Peter. What do you expect me to do?
Well, on that note, you got a similar thing from the Congo. Why haven't you given us your religion?
Huh? Well, yeah, I'm going to have to found it first.
And that's one of the reasons that Congo always stood out to me, because that was something that was noticeable when it happened. So there was the confirmation bias there of like, yes, Congo, I know. I founded my religion 2 turns ago. My missionary's not there yet. I'm still saving up faith to buy him. Jeez, give me a break.
Yeah. So what civs would we want to see every game? I think Shaka is a good candidate. It's unfortunate Dan isn't here for me saying that, but... he's a lot of fun. I think Genghis Khan in every game would give you good times. Certainly Congo, because he texts pretty well. And you have to throw Korea in the mix, too. Just for some balance.
I do notice that I feel like I do not see Egypt enough. Because Egypt, if I recall correctly, is one of those civs that actually has like a pretty strong bonus for you being like friends with her and sending her trade routes and stuff like that. So I always want Egypt to be in my game, especially when I'm playing with civs that like have like a strong growth power, like the Khmer or someone like that. I'm like, oh, come on, please let Egypt be in this game so I can trade with her and get free food.
Nope.
And then, no, she's not there. Or if she is, she dies like 50 turns into the game.
She likes that strong Genghis Khan military, and then she becomes Mongolian. Yeah. It's a good time.
Yeah, that's usually what happens to her.
That's what happens in multiplayer games.
Well, that happens to everybody in multiplayer games.
Builds 11 billion chariots and just decides to overrun whoever's closest. And they're like, oh. Because it'll be like only turn 50. What? They might barely have just researched Spearmen, but they haven't built them yet, so...
I would like to have the option, though, to be able to set the game setup screen to, like, filter out maybe certain civilizations or leaders, not only for me, but also for the AI, just so that, like, I can maybe see more civs and more leaders if I feel like one's popping up too much. I'd also like to have a way to be, like, for me to select a random civ, but for the game to, like, know which civs I've, like, played recently or have already beaten the game with and then not pick those ones. So that, you know, I don't keep re-rolling the same civ over and over and over again.
That's been a fairly often requested thing. I don't feel like a huge percentage of all players do, but I see that on forums now and then throughout the years, even dating back to Civ 4, but also Civ 5 and Civ 6. It's just been one of those, like, small features that people would like. And I think that would be pretty easy to implement with just, like, a drop-down menu and checkbox. Like, here's the people that you can get, and then you just X out whoever you don't want to get for that.
Right, like, especially with the Hall of Fame in the game. Like, just look at that. Oh, you've beaten the game with these civs. Don't pick those civs.
Yeah.
Well, even just having a tab with an exclusion list or something. I don't want these people against me, but I don't want to be these people either.
Yeah.
Right. I probably would have used that for Congo in Civ 6 Vanilla, because I'm just like, all right, I don't want to found religions anymore. Leave me alone.
Well, I didn't found religions, but then that just caused us to have some differences that were resolved otherwise. Just don't use archery units against this unique unit. We'll get to that later.
And skimming through the forum topic, I don't feel like I'm seeing any one civ, like, pop out a lot. So it looks like, you know, everyone else is seeing a pretty good variety of civilizations. So.
Yeah, I'm sure that this isn't one of those areas that's likely to turn up an actual bug with leader presentation or something. It's all like that fabricate claim nonsense from EU4. My gosh. There have been some times in games, and that's one example where where it's not actually going randomly the way the odds are presented to you. So that's that can catch you off guard now and then. But most of the time, these pseudo-random number generators are pretty good, and human beings cannot actually perceive whatever limitations they have. They just think they see patterns in randomness. Most of the time, that's the case. And that includes in Civ games.
Confirmation bias is a very powerful force.
Yes. Although, again, in Civ 4, you were more likely to see some leaders than others because of the way the algorithm worked. So, if you're suspicious, you can do controlled trials or look at the code, and maybe you'll find something. Usually you won't, but sometimes you do.
Yeah, there's probably also a lot of Civ 5 players who were veterans of Civ 4, and then, like, they rolled the same Civ twice in a row, and they're like, oh, this problem again? Even if it wasn't actually true.
I don't think Civ 5 dropped with too many alternate leaders for Civs. So I think it would have been avoided that way.
Well, no, there weren't any. But I mean, just by random happenstance, like, the same Civ shows up twice in, like, two consecutive games. You know, someone who maybe played a lot of Civ 4 might be like, oh, this problem again? You know what
maybe.
I mean? Like I said, confirmation bias.
Maybe. That'd be attributing one problem to a different type of problem necessarily, though. But, yeah, you never know. Some people do that now and then. Because it did randomize civs in Civ 4 properly. It was leaders that were inconsistent.
Right.
So are we done there? Because I hear Civ 5, and speaking of Civ 5, we have a clue without posting an article. Civilizations at War, Civilization 6 versus Civ 5. And comparing the games. I don't know if I want to read through the entire article on the show. Clue Without does give a summary on the page. I'm just looking if there's anything here that jumps out for me, for others. Because, like, for me personally, I like Civ 6 more than 5 for a couple reasons. It does have somewhat better incentives, or I should say the significantly better incentives, because it doesn't have the same degree of tall versus wide cancer. So that's a big advantage to Civ 6. The graphics are pushed as far as I'm concerned. The way the games run... if you have a lot of cities in Civ 5, it was slowing down, but now machines are better, so they're probably pretty similar, but the computers have improved since Civ 5, at least, the hardware, that is. So I find Civ 6 runs a little bit better for me than Civ 5 did in their relative eras. Controls are a nightmare in both, so I'm not going to say too much about that. I do miss the movement of Civ 5 a little bit compared to Civ 6, you know, with terrain.
I would like Civ 6's movement a lot better if, like I've said on numerous occasions, like the map were more properly scaled for that sort of, you know, hex-based tactical gameplay.
Yeah, and comparing Civ 5 to Civ 6, that's a problem in both games. Civ 5 only partially mitigated it by wrecking expansion, basically, and encouraging few cities with tradition so much, or, you know, like slightly more cities with liberty, as your only really viable strategies, and most people want tradition. So,
right.
Okay. You can get around the unit clutter to some degree by just making less crap on the map, but that's not a very fun way to go about a 4X strategy game, in my opinion.
Well, it's not even just the unit clutter, it's also just the pace at which the units move. Like, Civ 5, you could always spend one movement point to move onto terrain, so yeah. Moving units across the board was a lot quicker and smoother than it is in Civ 6, where you have to stop before entering a tile, which I think is a good rule. Like I said, it's just there's not enough open space to work with in the game.
Yeah, that's exactly, because the clumping of units because of the terrain gets really frustrating, and it makes a problem with like moving units in general being frustrating exacerbated. And you're exactly right. Yeah. If the map had more room, that wouldn't be as much of an issue.
And Civ 5 also had better roads and railroads to allow you to move your units faster. Like, in Civ 6, you don't start to actually see a movement benefit from your roads until, like, halfway through the game.
Yeah, that's true. Other than just ignoring some terrain stuff, they're pretty weak for quite some time.
Yeah, it just gets you over the hills and really bad or through a forest really quickly, but it doesn't give them a little bit of acceleration, which is... When you have a unit that's like the Legions, who in real life did build roads to get to conquering faster, like, give them a little bit of acceleration. Why can't we get there faster? It's a road, you know?
Right. Yeah, and then on top of that, in Civ 5, you could actually build the roads where the heck you wanted them, and in Civ 6, like, that's a lot more of a chore.
Yeah, you have to go and build the engineers to do that, and that's not until fairly well along in the tech tree.
Yeah, and he's only got, like, what, two charges? And did they change it so that building a road no longer costs a charge because there's actually more things you can do with the engineer now? Or does the road still cost one of the military engineers two charges?
I actually don't know because I haven't used them in so long.
No, I haven't either.
Yeah, I pretty much only use them now for tunnels, so I can't remember.
Yeah, the traders are just
the
better.
All the mountain ranges don't have to be the Himalayas. No.
Yeah, I would also like to say that... A Clue Without, like, asks, like, why is this Civ 5, Civ 6 comparison still a thing? And I think the article does actually answer that, because on the very first paragraph, it says that Civ 6 and Civ 5 recently swapped on Steam's, you know, top games list. So the reason this is coming up is that Civ 6 has finally surpassed, I guess, Civ 5 in terms of how many people have bought it or are actively playing it.
But which, this isn't that unusual, because it took a long time for Civ 5 to top Civ 4.
Yeah, right. And the DLC model pushes that even more, because you release vanilla Civ 6 against, like, full-developed Civ 5, and anybody who wasn't really opposed to the core mechanics of Civ 5, it's going to be a hard switch at first, because you just have more features and things to consider in Civ 5 than 6, initially.
Yeah, a lot of, and there's some of the people who aren't going to hop over until later, also because they're waiting to get a better computer that could run the newer game.
Yeah.
Well, and Civ 6's sales on Steam are probably actually going to be, for lack of a better word, stunted a little bit, because the game is currently available on other platforms, unlike Civ 5, and is about to become available on more platforms. You know, it's I think they're doing console releases. Like, I think they come out next week, right?
Yeah, that's I don't know exactly when, but it's in the very near future that they're going to be out on consoles. This is where I wish we had Canis, because Canis knows, but I don't know this offhand. We talked about
I feel like I just saw a tweet from Firaxis, like, earlier this week, saying the games would be out on consoles next week. So I think that's an accurate...
Yeah, getting it out before Thanksgiving and all the sales and stuff.
That's right. You can one more turn your way through Thanksgiving and not even have to deal with in-laws.
And this is where people say that the UI had to suffer for it, but I disagree. Like, if you're playing Civ on a console, your input efficiency is more important than ever. Like, you're not going to get through a game nicely if you have to, like, painstakingly switch between stuff with a lot of inputs, or have to, like, drag your cursor around with a joystick for ages. So I think streamlining the inputs is even more important, and having bindable keys is even more important. But we'll
PS4
see how it goes.
Does have the the touchpad thingy, and I'm wondering if Civ 6 on consoles will use that touchpad like a mouse pointer or a laptop touchpad. It's really difficult to use on the PS4 in that way because it's so small, but it is there, and I'm wondering if they use it.
Yeah, they might. Although
I just want to say one of the thumb joysticks would be more...
Yeah, if the touchpad is that small, I might prefer the thumb joystick, even though it's slower.
Yeah, I probably would too, but like I said, it's there, so I'm curious if they use it.
But you could have a situation like where you press a button to go to next unit, and then like you use the joystick to like plot a course, but it doesn't commit until like it shows you an expected path for a unit to take, and it doesn't commit until you hit a second button. Like you can do that stuff, and if you're practiced, you could do those kinds of inputs really quickly.
Yeah, my guess would be, you know, I think if I were designing the game, it'd be something like use the left and right triggers to cycle through units, and use the left and right shoulder buttons to cycle through cities. That's probably how I would implement.
Oh yeah, that would make sense.
And maybe even like hold both of the buttons to select like all of them. You know, hold both of the shoulder buttons to select all of your cities and add something to their queue, and press both of the trigger buttons to select like all of your units, or to like drag, you know, an area to select multiple.
That'd be nice. It's the same thing with the city menu too. It'd be nice to have some control from there. I know I've spoken about it in the past on the show. Those are just features that didn't need to go away, and certainly could be supported on consoles and would make consoles better too, not just PC players.
Yeah, I am curious, but not curious enough to spend $60 on a game that I already own.
Yeah.
So, Firaxis, if you want to send me a free copy of the PS4 version of Civilization VI, I would be happy to play it and write a review for you.
Mm-hmm.
I still have an Xbox One. That's the newest console I have, and I haven't used that in a while either. I've pretty much gone PC Master Race myself. It's just more convenient. Although consoles are basically computers now anyway. But then, you know, I have a computer to my liking. Why would I get another computer?
Right. But yeah, back on to like the actual topic, I would definitely agree that Civ 4, Civ 5, and Civ 6 all have like strengths and weaknesses compared to and relative to each other, and it is very hard to, for me anyway, to definitively say that one of those games is like the best of the three, or to definitively rank them, because yeah, each of them does things that I like, and then each of them doesn't do things that the others do that I wish they did. Like, you know, Civ 6, I really like that it's more of a builder's game. You know, in Civ 5, like, the cities were just kind of almost like military watchtowers and not, like, real cities. But because you're actually building things on the map in Civ 6, like, I get more enjoyment out of actually literally building my empire as opposed to just conquering one. But, yeah, Civ 5, like, I really like... I preferred how the trade routes in Civ 5 worked. I preferred how... The Great Works worked in Civ 5, especially like the theming bonuses and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's hard to say that one is definitively better than the other.
And you could pass the standing army tax in every game. Troll.
And I still miss the civics system in Civ 4.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, in that case, like, between Civ 4's and Civ 6's card system... There's a lot to like in both, but I actually think Civ 6 has the best when it comes to that. Which probably sounds odd to me, because on balance, I would say Civ 4 is the best game. But that's on balance. There are certainly things that 5 and 6 do better than 4. I'd say, like, for example, Civ 5, which is my least favorite game of the three, has probably the best early game barbarian balance out of the three games, for example. It's really frustrating in both Civ 4 and Civ 6. Yeah, where you can just get really hosed by RNG no matter what you do, in a few cases, depending on your start. Like, you can just get scouted immediately in Civ 6. Or in Civ 4, if you have a fairly open area on high difficulties and you just roll poorly, you lose your buffer units, and now you either have to fight barbs constantly or just train out a whole bunch of units and get pretty far behind in your expansion and development.
And in Civ 4 as well, your cities didn't defend themselves. So if you left your capital unguarded because you sent your warrior and scout out to explore, yeah, the barbarians would literally just walk in and you lose the game.
Although I do think that cities needing units to defend them is better, and that Civ 4 has the best representation of city defense in the three games. A lot of people won't agree with me on that, but I really hate the huge city hit points. I really hate that you can hold off for many turns against a full army with basically nothing, such that your troop positioning doesn't matter very much in the newer games. Like, that yeah. bothers me, because troop positioning... Yeah. Like, people say that the new games are more tactical, and yet when I look at that stuff, I'm like, really? Like, it used to really matter where your units were in the earlier game, and now less so. I don't know if you're going to be able to claim this is more tactical.
I mean, I like the compromise that Civ 6 made, where you have to build the walls to get the bombardment. So you actually do have to invest in infrastructure to actually defend the cities and fend off an army. But I do think they're too strong. Right, well, you build the ancient walls, and like they're good for the whole game, pretty much. Like, I rarely ever upgrade to medieval or Renaissance walls, even on cities that, you know, are on the front lines of combat. And I would even say that like there's advantages and benefits even to the unit stacking systems in Civ 4 compared to the, you know, hex combat of Civ 5 and 6.
Yeah, there are some advantages. It did have the collateral initiative thing was. Kinda iffy, though. Like, so much of the game was collateral initiative, and I think that could have been balanced better.
Yeah, it could have.
I don't know how you do it, though. I mean, 1 year per tile isn't bad per se, but it does suffer from the insufficient space to really make full use of those tactics.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you would properly incentivize Civ 4 players to split up their armies a little bit more rather than just putting them all into large stacks, short of just having, like, a cap on how many units can be in a stack, or maybe making stacks cost more maintenance or something like that.
Well, interestingly, in multiplayer games, people did have to split stacks, because what would happen is everyone would have roads all over their land. So, like, the second you entered their land... They would not only be able to see your stack, but they would be able to choose when to attack your stack. So if you were even kind of close militarily, you'd just get hit by, like, 10 siege units. All your units would have very little health, and then you'd get completely wiped out. And then you'd have very little to defend yourself after that. So you really didn't want to go with one large stack unless you had a significant technological lead or something else was going on to make that attack viable. Like, there, you know their entire army is somewhere else, so you can take advantage of it now. Absent that, it was extremely risky to push into enemy territory in multiplayer, because unlike the AI, which was very inconsistent about punishing this, any decent human player would just shred you.
Yeah, and I almost exclusively played single player, so, you know, that was a tactic that never was relevant for me when I played Civ 4. And I was only playing on, like, the intermediate difficulties, you know, at that time as well, so the AIs were not much of a...
Yeah, and all Civ 4 was harder on high difficulties, but that mostly lends to the not being one unit per tile, so it could just leverage the full weight of its crushing production advantage on you and just hit you with, like, 30 things early and tech super fast.
30 Axemen Wonder?
Yeah, I mean, you would get stacks like that on Deity, and that's pretty obnoxious, because you also pay more maintenance on high difficulty, so if you build an army capable of defending that, then you're going to be behind. So, like, only the elite micro-wizards or people who are really good at gaming the AI diplomatic interactions would get their Deity, typically. I was the latter. I was not good enough micromanagement-wise to win consistently on Deity. I just won sometimes. And this is not a thing on Civ 6 or 5. Well, the AI itself doesn't tech quite quickly enough to put the same kind of pressure. And even when it does tech quickly, it doesn't leverage that into, like, a science or culture victory as rapidly relative to Civ 4. But the main difference is just that there's only so many units they can put on you at once. You know, even if they attack you with, like, everything they have at the start, they can probably only use, like, you know, 5 to 6 units to attack you at once rather than, like, 50. And that's a big difference, especially because of defensive terrain and such, and how strong cities are.
Yeah, and when you can't stack the units together, then, like, how you actually use the individual units is a lot more important. And that's where both Civ 5 and Civ 6 really do fall on their faces.
Yeah, oh, and if we're talking individual unit usage, then even Civ 4 AI fell on its face really hard. Like, you could bait out knights into suicide and stuff. And the only reason that was a bad trade to make was because their production advantage was so great that the knight actually cost them less than the unit you would, like, suicide to kill it. But on middle difficulties and below, that's not true. You could actually get the AI to throw away lots of valuable units for, like, basically nothing, or, like, really crappy units, and just win trades. And that'd be silly to do since it was so easy to conquer it anyway and lose even fewer resources, but the AI would suicide its units to kill lesser things pointlessly. That was in Civ 5, too. That was great. You remember the worker steal, and then You just repeatedly let them recapture the worker, kill the unit, take the worker, and then, hey guys, you want this worker?
Hey guys, bait, bait!
Yeah. And the AI would take the bait every time.
A human player, for the first time, would go, oh, wait a minute, you know. But the AI, no, let me just repeatedly throw this guy. No, I want that, I want that, I want that. Doesn't... If the AI could recognize that this getting repeatedly, you know...
Well, most human players would not let you get their worker anyway. That would have to be an oversight in the first place. It was like, people get a little nervous when your military units are around their civilians.
So as they should be.
Yeah, of course. So unless you're doing this from, like, out of the fog or something, it's pretty unlikely you're going to be able to snag a worker in any of the
or
games.
Or a barbarian outpost literally spawns, like, two tiles from your builder and you're like, or settler, and you're like, oh, come on!
Yeah.
Or your trader. That happens to be quite a lot. Is a barbarian spawning, like, the outpost is literally on the path that my trader is taking. And I'm like, well, I can't get a unit there in time. I guess I should just start figuring out which city I'm going to build a new trader in.
Now, that would frustrate me. I don't know if that's still true, but, like, when you have a camp or something, it can be in the fog, and then a unit can spawn, and that unit has movement. So you can actually have a fast unit spawn towards you and then move towards you. And then attack you, and that's a pretty big cheap shot from the barb
camps.
Yeah,
it is. And especially yet, early in the game.
I still prefer it to Sif4's barbs, because Sif4's barbs were obnoxious because of how RNG impacted the early game before catapults, and also opaque. Like, the best way to handle barbarians was to use, like, warriors, scouts, and workboats to block them spawning in the first place. It's like, come on, man. That's not good design. It was useful to know that once you knew that you were better off fighting barb galleys by using workboats to prevent them from existing, but that's just stupid.
Yeah, that was
yeah.
The fact that every combat in Sif4 had to result in one unit or the other dying is, I think, like the biggest thing that keeps me from going back and playing Sif4. Because that was something that always frustrated me, and now after playing Civ 5 and Civ 6, I think it would frustrate me even more. Because when you do have that combat matchup where you've got the 90, 95, 99% chance of winning, and you lose, and now you've got to spend the production to rebuild that unit, it's like kicking you when you're down, you know?
Yeah, although most of the game is balanced decently around that, because units cost relatively less, so you're expected to have more of them. And the siege mechanic... The siege and collateral mechanic takes away a lot of the RNG for that, because you just strip most of their health using collateral damage, and then, okay, you might lose, like, a couple units to 99% odds across an entire game, but it's going to be such a small proportion of your unit investment, and so few and far between that it's not a big deal. But
well, mostly
before construction, all that goes out the window. You can get absolutely hosed on one bad dice roll in the very early game, and that is not good. Again, the most important part of the game in any of these games, Civ 4, 5, 6, and before, is your early phase, because that snowballs. So having those bad outcomes so drastically affect your game is really frustrating, and that's a big problem in Civ 4.
Right, so if you send, like, a little army of, like, 3 or 4 units out to, like, take on one barbarian camp, and that barbarian, like, just luckily kills 2 of your units, it's like, oh, come on, really? Like, you know, in Civ 5 or Civ 6, you know, your army of 4 or 5 units would be overkill, right? Like, the barbarians wouldn't stand a chance. And it's like, yeah, because I sent a large army to make sure that, you know, nothing bad would happen. Whereas in Civ 4, like, yeah, you could still just get hosed.
Well, Civ 4 didn't use camps. They just appeared in the fog, as long as it was at least more than 2 tiles away from another unit.
Oh, right, but they did have cities.
Yeah, but the cities were kind of weird in that they weren't, like, Civ 5 and 6 barb camps. They were really passive. If you left the city alone for like 50 turns, it might organize a really tiny weak sauce assault, but honestly, like, the cities did more to prevent further barbs that are aggressive from spawning than they did to actually threaten you, unless you just really left them alone, like, for ages. So once barb cities started showing up, you actually got less barbarians, oddly, and so far. Again, opaque and non-intuitive. Like, that's not what you would anticipate. And reasonably, you would expect a barb city to be more aggressive than random spawning barbs, but it's not even close. It's just a free city, normally. Well,
you think if
you
have a city, they're
it,
not but... barbarians anymore, but...
Yeah, well, that's true, but they still otherwise act like barbarians. But yeah, the units in the city just sit there. So until it starts producing stuff, where it has like no workers and no like and a lower tech than most civs because it's based on an average and it trails the average of all civs. So and it's only one city, so its production and development is so stunted that they're really crappy. Like if you played Terra, then sometimes the New World barbarian cities would at least be. They would at least have done something, but even then it was really weak. Speaking of which, I haven't played Terra maps on Civ 6. How does that compare?
Neither have I. I used to love them in Civ 4.
Because you don't have Barb Cities now.
Yeah, the past couple of weekends we've been doing that with the multiplayer game, and it's not that bad, honestly. Because the thing with the with the Terra map is it puts like one or two city states on the main continent, and all the rest of the city states are over there.
Oh, okay. So you do have some incentive.
Pretty much clean it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Does it also do a good job of putting unique luxuries and resources on either continent? So like there's a reason for you to go to the new continent to get new resources?
I don't know that I've noticed if it was unique resources or not. I don't think it's been so much of a problem necessarily, at least in those games, but
well, yeah, the tuning of Civ 6 is such that it's going to be like you have to grow your cities a lot and have a fair amount of cities to be really crunched on luxuries, typically.
Yeah, but it was the first time we did it, played it. I deliberately took coupe, but then I also random rolled in one time too, and it was like, well, I'm just gonna go over here and settle all this stuff. Have fun with that extra AI over there, guys.
Yeah, coupe in a Terra map is kind of unfair.
I know, but I just wanted to do it the first time just to see.
And yeah, in our multiplayer games, you have to remember like the humans are friendly to each other mostly. So you're going to have guaranteed luxury trades that are more prevalent than you would get in single player. Yeah, so yeah. It's even less of an issue. I totally want back fellow humans. That would never happen.
Yeah, maybe. First of the game, later on.
Anything else we want to cover with our comparing e-civ peens?
Not really.
All right, in that case...
it's just the natural cycle of how the civ game goes.
Alright, so next up we have a topic from Miniature Death Robot on the Civ Fanatics forum titled Getting the Most Out of Unique Units. And Miniature Death Robot says that all the specific strategy guides I've read pay a lot of attention to unique units. However, in my experience, conquering cities is all about the siege units and bombers. What am I missing here? Are you used more useful in human v human matches? And then a lot of the forum topic is people comparing different UUs and saying which UUs are really good, which UUs are really bad. I do want to say that when I write strategy guides, I do try to point out when I think that a civilization or leader's unique unit or building or ability or whatever is not very useful. Like I even linked in this thread that I know specifically in my Georgia strategy guide, I said that the Kevser is kind of garbage. Like build them if you have a good opportunity to, but don't ever plan like your entire game around them because you're just going to be shooting yourself in the foot. So at least some people do cover that in their strategy guides. You know, there's a whole section on the Kevser, when they're useful, how to use them, and then like the actual guide is like one sentence or two. You know, use them if you can, otherwise don't worry about it.
And it really depends on Civ too. Like some, like you said, the Kevser is pretty weak, whereas some of the other unique units like the Orcart, for example, are extremely important to the Civ's progression in question.
Yes, that is a unique unit that you will build an entire strategy around. The Warcart, the Nubian, what is it, Petiti archer that has like three movement.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, those things are incredible as well.
Scythia's unique. Montezuma's unique. Maybe the Roman Legion. Like, those are units where you build your entire game plan around getting that unit early and using it for as long as you possibly can.
Although now that unique units are not guaranteed resourceless, that does put a constraint on some things like the Legion, which actually require the resource in question to use them, where that wasn't true in Civ 6 Vanilla. So some guys will be out of date in that regard. You can usually get the resource, but it's something to keep in mind. Like you want to procure that early so you can actually use your unique unit in its window where it's really strong. And it's true, once cities get walls, now you do have to have a way to deal with city walls. You still need to kill the enemy units And unique units do help you a lot in that regard, but when it comes to fighting the AI, you really don't need it, honestly, because the AI is not very good tactically, as we covered in our earlier segment, in any of the games. So it's quite easy to use, like, stock swordsmen with a great general and some archers or whatever, and just, like, kill all the AI units and lose nothing. That, unless it's way ahead of you technologically, that's pretty consistent to do. So, yeah, it does come down to the cities.
And kind of calling back to some of the stuff we talked about in the previous topic, I do feel like that window for using unique units in Civ 6 is a lot narrower and closes a lot quicker and more suddenly in Civ 6 compared to Civ 4 and Civ 5. Because, A, unlike Civ 5, well, I mean, it can, but unlike Civ 5, the unique abilities of the unit do not transfer when you upgrade the unit. So when that unit becomes obsolete, those abilities also become obsolete. And when you've got, like, a genuinely unique ability, like the Montezuma's Eagle Warrior's ability to capture builders from defeated enemy units, like, that ability basically just goes away, right, by halfway through the game. You can't use that anymore.
Yeah.
And then the other issue is, like we talked about before, like, the fact that it takes longer to get your units places. So there is much more of a risk, especially on the quicker game speeds in Civ 6, of by the time you get your army to where it needs to be, those units have become obsolete. So if you're playing on the longer game speeds, Epic and Marathon, that's not as big of a problem. You have more time to actually get your units places. But on shorter game speeds, like, sometimes it's, you get them there and the opponent already has better units.
The reason I don't completely agree is that the benefit of technology in unit quality is less in Civ 6 than earlier titles, to the extent where you can not just overcome more advanced units, but straight up surpass them by stacking bonuses to your military. So, like, you can have, for example, in the late game, artillery armies with great general boosts and some promotions legitimately killing endgame units. Anything other than a GDR on the ground will take a lot of damage from that. Same thing with infantry armies and a couple promotions, great general. If you have that stacked up, you can kill mech infantry very easily. Despite that, they're way ahead of you in tech. And then, because you have all these promotions and army, you can also shred the cities, often in a single turn. You strip the walls, and then your infantry have no trouble taking it. Yes. And if you compare that to, say, Civ 4, there was no way to keep up with future tech. And some of the tech breakpoints were just brutal. Like, going from longbows to rifles in Civ 4 was a nightmare. And considering that the AI is not so upgrade-happy in Civ 6, even now, I mean, it's been improved somewhat, but in the earlier game, it had such a discount to that the second it hit rifling, all this stuff would turn into rifles in, like, a couple turns. And that was really frustrating. So you had to make use of that window, and you had to get it right. If you were just, like, five turns too slow, it could change your game. Whereas if you're pushing a great general army with well-promoted units in Civ 6, the upgrades relative to unit production costs are cheaper in Civ 6 for you as well. Plus, even if they get ahead of you, you can probably still kill your units without losing anything. And that's a big difference.
Yeah, it's much more balanced about that than it used to be. Whereas, like, the unique units now, they're helpful, but they're not necessarily game-losing, game-winning. Because you can take, as you pointed out, the normal average unit army, you know, just the ordinary unit army, ordinary swords, ordinary rifles, or what have you, and go and put them all together and smash some other civ.
And keep in mind, you can keep some Eagle Warriors around and just, like, pick off weakened units using the Eagle Warrior.
you can, but I think eventually it gets to the point where even a weakened unit is probably going to slaughter it in combat. I don't know, maybe. I haven't explicitly tested it. Maybe that's not true, I don't know.
I mean, eventually, but you're talking, like, so late in the game that it's kind of silly by that point. But yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, you just have to be careful about making sure that you actually get that enemy unit weak enough to the point where your Eagle Warrior can kill it without having already accidentally killed it with the units that are intended to soften it up.
That's true. That is a bit annoying to do that. I agree.
You can't, like, get him down to one hit point and then choose to not use the rest of your six combat strength and spare his life so you can enslave him.
Yeah.
False swipes. So what are some other... Egypt's is pretty good early on as well.
It's very expensive, though.
Yeah, but it's good, though. So that's another one.
The Toa with the Maori, because that's a sword replacement type thing, but it doesn't require the iron, so you just sit there and go chunk, 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 chunk.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, look.
Yeah, resourceless is a big advantage, even more so than it was on vanilla, because now, like, you don't have to worry about resource accrual, even. Like, the moment you have that, you can spit out those swords. Now everybody else can't do that. So that's a,
And if you're not using those units, you can sell all that excess iron for a pretty good chunk of change.
That's true. Probably don't want to sell it to your target, but anybody else would be game.
Yeah, don't sell your iron to Montezuma or Alexander. Sell it to, like, sell it to Congo and to Gandhi.
Yeah, it's great that Congo will buy that. He's just trying to get his night rush down, I guess. The Cossack's really good too, but it's too late to
change
the game.
Yeah, that was pointed out otherwise. The threat is that some of them are just, the unique unit itself isn't bad, but it comes so late in the game that it's not going to be a game decider.
Yeah, any air unit, that's probably going to be the case with.
Yeah, and stuff like Rough Riders, which Night Terrant brings up. Like, those civs like that basically don't have a unique unit, so I wouldn't do anything more than passing mention them in a guide about that civ.
And then, you know, map type comes into play as well. If you've got a civ that has naval units and you're playing on Pangaea, well, I mean,
Roll England on a Pangaea, welp.
Yeah, right, or Norway, or Phoenicia.
Norway gets the pillage bonuses, though, no?
That's true. Norway's UU actually is, like, decent on a not continents or archipelago map. You just have to hope that the other players actually bother to settle near the cities.
Well, they're not.
Or
most
settle
people
near the
won't
coast.
Settle directly on the coast, but you might be able to get some improvements that way. I was more thinking don't they get bonuses for pillaging in general?
Well, yeah, but we were talking about unique units.
Yeah,
so
that's true. Yeah, their UU is kind of weak.
Yeah, the longship I actually really like as a unique unit, but it is, you know, very situational about, like, but they also have that Berserker, which is probably what you're talking about. So, yeah, that one's good.
Yeah, the Berserker is iffy too, though, just because of how it sits on the tech tree.
Yeah, you gotta get to military tactics, which is probably usually something that most people don't bother beelining to, and then you can't upgrade into it, you have to build it from scratch, and I don't know
problem.
If it costs iron now, does it?
I don't know.
In Gathering Storm?
I haven't used them in Gathering Storm. I used them in Vanilla because they were broadly considered one of the worst civs, so I just picked them for that reason. But now that Pillaging has been buffed, I wouldn't put them quite as low any longer, despite that they're unique, you know, they're still not that great.
Yeah, and you don't have to waste 2 social policy cards in order to be able to pillage both districts and improvements. I think they combined those onto 1 policy card now. Let's see, anyone else have really good unique units?
I'm sure we'll be forgetting somebody, and someone will get upset because we forgot somebody. And
are
a fair few
one of
good
you said
uniques.
I think one of you said that the Cossack is really good, but I'm pretty sure that someone on this thread said that they played with Russia and thought the Cossack was crap.
Yeah,
so.
But like attack and move is, like, now that that's not standard for cavalry, that's really strong to have that by itself.
Yeah, it is. And I also, personally, I'm fond of rangers and of privateers.
That's not good.
Like Scotland, because they've got that fancy unique ranger. And it's really easy to get cores with those, because you just, like, build a bunch of scouts that probably take 1 or 2 turns to build at that point in the game, just before you tech to rifling. And then you just merge them with your, you know, scouts that you've had since the start of the game, and you've got some really buffed up cores.
Sorry, I briefly dropped there. I caught most of that, but not all of it.
Yeah, when you have the bigger maps and you need to map clean up that game, those guys can be very handy instead of you having to send your actual proper military units out because you have other things to do with those guys.
Yeah, and then there's, like, the Brazilian battleship, and just battleships by themselves are great, so having a better battleship is greater.
Yeah, you just have to get to them, man.
Yeah, but I mean, once you have them, like, coastal cities or cities that are within, you know, 2 tiles of the coast are just, like, yours if you want them, if they don't have battleships themselves.
Yeah, or planes, because planes are pretty obnoxious.
Aren't battleships pretty good at shooting down planes, though?
I don't think so. I thought it was destroyers that had the better anti-air, but maybe I'm forgetting.
The rest of the naval units are meant to be slightly vulnerable, I think.
Yeah,
that's how I would think it would work, but I just feel like I played a game once and, like, was either fighting someone else's battleship or had planes attacking my battleship and thought, like, dang, why is the battleship so good at taking down planes? Maybe it was, like, an era thing. Maybe they were fighting me with, like,
oh, yeah, if they're attacking you with, like, biplanes or something, But if they're attacking you with proper fighters, I don't think so. Like, from what I saw from Victoria's tests, it was pretty brutal and not in favor of the ships. But yeah, if they're attacking you with, like, back arrow stuff, then that's not as big a deal. So are we done with unique units?
Hey.
I guess we will move on to a less unique unit, or you're unique in that it gets one use per, perhaps. So, are thermonukes too strong by Karnix? Now, let me just answer this question first off, and it might be surprising to get this answer from me, but I would actually argue, yes, they are too strong in the modern Civ games. Like, and I posted in this thread, because he's showing an example where you can punch a, or you can, like, destroy a SAM with a nuke, and then you can take out a city with a nuke, so there's basically no counterplay. And it's true that they're really expensive, but it's kind of ridiculous, the hammer ratio that you get from nukes versus anything else. So they really do need direct counterplay. And another thing, like, people point out, yeah, they should be devastating. Well, no. The problem with that is that in Civ, one city is representing multiple cities for a civilization, necessarily. Like, you have to take it that way. Like, there's no way France has, like, five cities in their life total. So
yeah.
What a thermonuke is doing here is comparable to something like destroying the entire state of Texas with one nuke.
Okay, then that's a little strong.
Yeah, but
it's a little home, huh?
Well, that's the example I gave in the thread, because Texas is really, really freaking big. Like, it's bigger than a heavy majority of the countries in the world. And a nuke is just... like I said, it's cartoon ridiculous. You could throw, like, 12-plus nukes on Texas, maybe even 24 nukes on Texas, and that would really, like, that would screw people over. Like, you would have very, very long-lasting effects. Millions would die. You wouldn't be able to farm things there. There would be serious problems. But it would not completely wipe out all human life there and leave a crater. Like, there'd still be some viable stuff, even if you fired that many. So there's
the
a pretty big...
is basically acting as if it's a planet buster from Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, which is a bit much, because that's not, like, future... that's, like, super future tech, basically, for Civ purposes. And I just don't think the game needs them that strong. Like, people are saying they're too weak in Civ 4. No, if you had people running tac nukes on you in Civ 4, as long as their production was decent, you were still incapable of defending yourself. You were going to lose with nukes at that level of strength. They did not need to be made stronger. Like, you were completely hosed in Civ 4. And that took, like, two or three nukes to clear the units out of a city. But one nuke
can
would really
nukes,
weaken them.
In Civ 6, can nukes even be shot down before they hit the target? Because I think I remember Civ 5, you could not shoot down nukes. And that was one of the things that I thought made them a little bit too powerful.
You can, but there's ways around it, because SAMs are limited. So
right, because I think in Civ 6, the way they work is you load them onto bombers, right? So the bomber can get shot down, hypothetically.
Yeah, or just
or
intercepted.
Can be turned away by a SAM. Like, you don't even have to shoot it down. You can just damage it and make it retreat, right? Without dropping the bomb.
Yeah. The problem is, it's in the first post here, SAMs only have an intercept radius of 1, so you can actually kill them with a nuke by hitting them outside their intercept radius.
Right, well, and then also I think you can just use fighters or whatever, because don't they still also only get 1 intercept per turn, or was that in Civ 5?
Is that true? I admit I haven't used air units a lot in the newer games. So
the
nuance
of
their interactions.
I don't think I've ever actually had a nuke used in any of my games of Civ 6. Like, I think when I first played Vanilla, like when it first came out, and I got to the end of the game, I dropped a nuke on someone just to see what it would do and what it would look like.
Yeah,
And then, like, reloaded the earlier save to actually finish the game, like, for real. But I don't think I've ever actually seen, like, a legit use of a nuclear weapon in any of my games of Civ 6, ever.
Well, I've never been nuked by the AI, so I don't know.
Well, I've never been nuked by the AI, and I don't think I've ever nuked an AI in Civ 6.
I don't think I've done it really since Civ 5. Because there'll be sometimes in an endgame of Civ 5 where somebody was so powerful that nuking them first before you invaded was the best way to go. But
oh, those will clean out carpets in a hurry, for sure.
Yeah. But I don't think I've encountered it in Civ single player or multiplayer where he absolutely had to do it. Grim just does it for fun.
Yeah.
Another thing, too, is, or another question that I have is, do nuclear weapons in Civ 6 contribute to global warming?
I don't know. They shouldn't, but who knows?
I'm going to have to run a game later and just go dropping nukes just to find out. That's a good question.
Oh, because another counterplay to the nukes being too strong could be if the nukes actually are doing global damage to, like, everyone in the game, then you do have that possibility of there being a situation where it's like, yeah, I could use a nuke to damage this enemy civ, but then, like, you know, I'm risking global warming happening and my own cities might flood before I can get my flood walls up. So then there's, like, a risk-reward element to deciding whether or not to use them. And you've got a little bit of that, like, mutually assured destruction thing going on, which in real life is the deterrent to using a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, in real life. In Civ, not so much, because if you damage everybody's infrastructure and you're the only one with nukes, you're just going to extend the amount of time where you have nukes and they don't.
Right. One improvement that I will say about Civ 6 compared to Civ 5 is I don't think Civ 5 had the missile silos. I think the nukes had to be stationed in cities or on submarines or... was that it? Just cities and submarines? But Civ 6, you have the missile silos, which you can build away from your cities. So if someone does take out your city with a nuke, you still might have the chance to shoot back with your own nuke. It's not going to be destroyed along with the city and any other units that are in the city.
Can't they just take the silo?
I think you could. I don't know if that would destroy the silo or the... It probably shouldn't, right? Because that mutually assured destruction should be a significant deterrent to using a nuke against someone else who is nuclear capable.
I think the design space for nukes in Civ, really going back to when they were implemented, is just to end the game. Nukes end the game.
I suppose that's true.
Because
now, especially
for them
with Civ
every
6...
version of the game has been so limited. So, like, it's the first time... Well, that's not true, but it's one of the few times in Civ where the attacker has the advantage instead of the defender. And that advantage goes from, like, significant to frickin' massive when we start talking about nukes. Because normally the defender has a significant advantage, but it's not as huge as just having the attacker capable of wiping out everything before the defender gets a move. And even
are
in Civ 4, you could do that.
Are the nukes available earlier, though, in Civ 6, like, compared to Civ 5 and Civ 4? Because there is, like, now that whole extra era. You know, we have it used to be, like, the modern era was the end of the game, but now we have an information era, and now in Gathering Storm, a future era. So, like, does that actually push the availability of the nukes to a point in the game that's early enough where, like, there is still a substantial chunk of the game left to play after nukes can be deployed?
I don't think so. I feel like they were relevant earlier in Civ 4 in some ways. Because you did have atomic and information in future era in Civ 4 as well. But you just needed fission and rocketry. And you could beeline those techs to some degree.
Yeah, you could get in there and get the nukes early and... start cleaning out a stronger AI that way.
Yeah. The only... Like, you had SDI in Civ 4, so ICBMs would get shut down a lot, and TAC nukes would have a two-thirds chance of evading interception. But it was still a pretty significant nerf on your ability to nuke people. You also had improvements that reduced the damage in cities. So the nukes had some more counterplay, but when push comes to shove, there's just no army in Civ 4 that could stand up to nukes. And because it was stack-based... a single nuke could just erase everything. And
yeah,
that's
and
still true in the modern civs, that if somebody has a chunk of nukes, you're probably screwed. Because once they hit
they
you can't do
that
anything.
Carpet.
Yeah.
And Civ 4 also had the bunkers and the fallout shelters, too, that you could build as, like, some degree of defensive counterplay.
Yeah, so you wouldn't lose a bunch of your infrastructure. You'd still lose some, but you wouldn't lose as much
as
you did without.
It would take more nukes to, like, completely flatten somebody.
Yeah. Some of your population infrastructure would be spared.
But still, even with all that, if you, like, put 6 nukes per city in, like, submarines and just declared and dropped 6 nukes on every city in range, there wasn't a whole lot left on the target. Then they wouldn't
get
a move, really.
Nuclear weapons in Civilization is definitely one of those areas where I think the designers have to make a conscious decision whether these are going to be designed for gameplay or for realism. And in Civ, it definitely seems like they've erred towards gameplay, like you said, them just being a way to end the game earlier for the, you know, civilization who has them.
Yeah, they seem almost entirely designed to break a military stalemate, because even if both people have nukes, at that point, whoever uses them first wins, rather than having, like, similar strength units able to repel each other using Defender's advantage. And I guess I'm okay with that, although it does put a crimp on most of the other victory conditions again, because if you have the tech to use nukes, then like stuff like culture victory is not going to hold up very long. You have to win before nukes if you're going for that. And
right,
your opponents
but
are
of course, if you have the techs for building spaceship parts and stuff like that, then you have the tech for nukes.
Yes, yes, of course. But then that means you could have also just used the tech for nukes to win that way instead of going for space, if you prefer.
Right, which was my point.
Yeah.
Like you said, it kind of cuts the legs out from the other victory types, because you can just end the game earlier by just nuking everyone into oblivion, as opposed to going through the time and trouble of building all the spaceship parts, and then launching it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Which, in Civ 6 in particular, takes a long time to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of production in that, and a lot of extra attacks. It's probably less expensive in production to conquer stuff, honestly.
Yeah, and then you've got spies constantly sabotaging your spaceports, so you're constantly having to repair your spaceports, and yada, yada.
Spies are fun. I don't know which game I like spies the most in, because they've had an amusing role in Civ 4, 5, and 6, and it's hard for me to pick one.
Yeah, I've never been fully happy with how the spies have worked in any of the games.
Yeah, they've always had some issues, but they've been lousy the whole way through. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, in Civ 4, I liked the idea of the spies being a unit, but it was just so tedious. Especially since they got returned to your capital, like, every time you used them.
Yeah.
And then you had to, like,
gotta march them all the way back.
Yeah, that was terrible. I think if Civ 4 had been such that, like, you could use the spy multiple times in enemy territory. Like for example, if in Civ 6, if the spy were a unit and it had, like, 3 or 5 charges before it had to, was either used up or had to return to your territory, I think then it being a unit would maybe be viable, would be good.
I don't know, though, because, like, what's the advantage? Since other things aren't interacting with it anyway, just cut that out and just put it where you assign it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to have something where its position on the map is relevant, you know, like other spies can see it, or like maybe there being infrastructure that you, like maybe you build checkpoints or something like that along your borders, or have a policy for border checkpoints, so when they cross your border, there's a chance they might get seen. But yeah, it gets weird.
Yeah.
Or if they blow it one too many times, then they disappear because they've compromised them.
Well, that can happen now anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they get...
I think Civ 6 is pretty reasonable, except for the wrong display odds. Like, if you you cannot take the chance of getting caught display odds on faith, and that has been demonstrated in one of the threads.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's one of those times where the odds represented are actually inaccurate, because it's not it's showing like one factor accurately, but not considering others. So your real odds of getting caught are nowhere near what's being displayed.
I think my biggest problem with the way that spies work in Civ 5 and Civ 6 is that, like, they really do just feel like they come out of nowhere. You know, like, you have no idea that someone else is committing espionage against you, like, at all,
until
one of your great works... Yeah, one of your great works goes missing.
I mean, that's
kind of...
You're
like, oh, come on, really?
That's kind of the point of espionage, though, isn't it?
Well,
like...
yeah.
Yeah, but
it has to be a surprise, but...
Well, I guess what I'm saying is like, I could see room for there maybe being more smaller missions that they have to do to work up to that, and, like, there's a chance that the other player, like, discovers and then actually has a chance to deploy their own spies or social policies or whatever to try to catch them before they do the big thing, like stealing a great work or sabotaging a spaceport. Because, like I said, it just feels like it comes out of the blue, and again, there's not really much counterplay to it, because you have no idea where the spies are going to be. And in Civ 6 in particular, you've got larger empires with more cities. You can't put one of your spies in every one of your cities.
Well, you're probably putting them in your spaceports or something, if you care.
Yeah, and they only protect, like, the one district and the adjacent district. So it's not even like you put them in your city center and they're protecting the whole city.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, eh. It's another area where I'm not sure if the counterplay to them is quite right, quite where it should be, similar to the nukes.
I don't think they're as egregious, though. And, like, if you add more complexity to it, I worry about click fatigue. Because I think it would be difficult to make a really engaging espionage system where the decisions are non-trivial inside the scope of Civ and Civ turns.
Yeah. It would have to be something where the spies are available much earlier in the game. Like, you have medieval or renaissance, like, spies.
It would be interesting, because you have that. I mean, somebody who was a diplomat in that era was also a spy, basically.
Now you're making me think of Crusader Kang.
But you had to have diplomats so you could negotiate with people, so you basically had to have spies, but then I guess you just had to learn to look for the obvious spy.
You know? I do, however, really like that in Civ 6 you actually have to build your spies, like you don't just get them for free, so it actually requires an active investment on the player's part to have a good espionage or counter-espionage network. It's not just like, oh, you researched a tech and now you just have a free spy, you know, what are you going to do with it now?
Yeah.
It was very passive in Civ 5, so I like that Civ 6 at least made it a little bit more active.
Yeah, it was pretty much just Civ 5 that did that. You had to invest in them otherwise. Even in the Civs before 4, you had to invest in them.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a tangent from thermonuclear weapon strength. Although, you could use spies to nuke people in Civ 2, so there was that. We could bring that back.
Oh boy.
That was fun.
I feel like nuclear suitcases were in later Civ games as well.
Were they?
Like, wasn't that something you could do in Civ 4?
No, that was definitely out in Civ 4. I don't remember about Civ 3. The last time I used it was Civ 2, but I barely played Civ 3, so I can't say it wasn't in Civ 3. But I know for a fact it was in 2, and it was not in 4. The nuclear suitcases were great. As if Civ 2 needed even more broken tactics, because you could, like, straight up buy cities away from each other using espionage in Civ 2. Unless they were running certain governments, you could just use your diplomat or spy to just
roll up and say, hey, want to join my empire? Sure.
Yeah, it's not even a do you want to. It's not even a dice check. Like, if you had the money, the city was yours.
Yeah. I mean, the bigger the city, the more expensive it got, therefore the more impractical it was. But you could buy off a lot of your enemy.
Yeah. And I forget what it did with the military units, but that was no joke, that stuff. Now, that was a strong anti-stack incentive Civ 2 had. Oh my gosh. With the whole, like, if you're not in a fort or a city and you lose a unit, everything in the stack is done. That was pretty brutal. But yeah, that's even more significant than collateral to not do it. Oh, okay. So the summation here is that you should use nukes because they're fun. So that's our takeaway. And that they might be a little too strong, but enjoy it.
But that's the point.
Yeah. Just end the game now.
It's not realistic compared to real life, but a lot of things in Civ are not realistic compared to real life, so.
Yeah, most things.
And another thing, too, in Civ 6 is you do have to have the other things going, too, because you, unlike in previous Civ games, you have to load the nuclear bomb onto a bother. So if you did not bother investing in bombers, you know, like, you don't really get to use them, so.
Yeah,
it's not like you just research the fission technology and you're just dropping bombs left and right. Like, you have to research in other techs and invest in other units and infrastructure in order for them to be useful.
Because in Civ 4, you had to build the Manhattan Project, and then you needed both fission and rocketry, or you couldn't build nukes. And you needed the uranium, of course. And ICBMs are very impractically expensive compared to tech nukes, but tech nukes only had a range of 4. So you would also need submarines if you wanted to nuke anything meaningful beyond your borders. That or getting open borders with people so you could house your nukes in their land and fire them off on your hapless target from multiple angles, I guess.
Yeah, which is something that I don't think you can do at all in Civ 5 or Civ 6. You can't station your nukes or planes in other people's cities.
Yeah, I don't think so. That is kind of unfortunate for planes. Nukes is maybe a bit of a reach, but being able to station aircraft would be nice.
I mean, in real life, that's a lot of what happens. I mean, I think most of the nukes in Europe are American nukes, I think. I could be wrong about that.
I don't know if we have accurate counts. European nations also have nukes. I don't know what percentage are U.S. versus, say, French or something.
Right, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, there are a lot of planes and tanks and, you know, nuclear missiles in Europe that are American, you know, just because of the way that works. And then you had the situations where, like, the Soviet Union tried putting nukes in Cuba and, you know, all that. So, I think there's definitely room in the game for being able to use other cities as, like, you know, proxies for your military. And, you know, there's the only thing that Civ 6 does with that respect is the ability to levy units. So
we just need to fix diplomacy first, and then this mechanic would be fine.
Yeah, about that.
That'll be simple. We'll just fix diplomacy.
And while they're at it, they might as well just fix the AI and make the AI play perfectly, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's in program all this stuff for us already.
Yeah. It just make a good AI. Just do that. And then it'll all be taken care of. Yeah. Totally possible. All right. Any other comments on thermonukes?
Nope.
Going once, going twice. All right, then.
All this has been 349 of Polygust. It's a three-man, well, two-man and one-woman army today. I'm Makalua, and with me today, as usual, the Mian team.
Using nukes like OMA noob tubes.
And mega bears.
Apparently I should start using nukes.
Yes, you should. They're fun.
Yes. All the nukes.
Big bada boom.